Hey everybody, this is Sam with National Sports Overtime, and it's been a little while since I have gave you more of a coaching episode. I was trying to do news updates, short, quick bursts about just one story, and I've been going back and forth. Should I do that? Should I do just news and updates of the day? Should I take on a topic a day? That's a little bit where I'm struggling. If you guys want to write me at nationalsportsovertime@gmail.com and tell me what you would prefer, that sure would help. I'm also on Twitter. It's NatSportsOT. So N-A-T, NatSportsOT is my Twitter handle. On Facebook at National Sports Overtime. And, you know, any advice or anything you want to hear, I would be more than happy to try it out and see if you like it and I like it. But I really wanted to get into this. A lot of people on my different social media accounts, friends of mine, have been talking about this summer's different and all of the changes that they're having to make and how some of their kids did not like when the pandemic started, the pandemic era of 18 months started, where they didn't go to school, and sometimes they did, and sometimes they didn't, and sports got canceled, and then they were back on, and then they could have no fans, and then they could have their parents, and they couldn't have anybody else, but then they could have their immediate family, and then they could have their grandparents, and just everything. And I thought, that's something that a coach really has to deal with, is change. And you need to be working with them now in the summer. You need to, the first week of practice, be bringing them in 15, 30 minutes early and talking about change. Name me one team from four-year-old soccer all the way up to professional level, to the Olympics, or whatever. You have to deal with change. And I guess that's the thing. I don't know that anybody truly like the word change or even going through the act of change. But I think if you can understand it and you can get members of your team to, it bothers them, but yet they can still get through it and help others through it, it makes a difference. You're not going to get six-year-olds to understand things change. They're going to have a meltdown. You're going to have to deal with that. You're going to have to talk to them way after the meltdown, maybe after the game, and talk a little bit about it. But guys, you really need to pay attention to how things change. And that is so true, is things change. Life will get increasingly difficult if you don't know how to deal with it. And I am a big fan. I encourage all of you, if you have not gotten in to Tim Knight's system, his last name is spelled K-I-G-H-T. If you have not read anything from him, you have never heard a podcast with him on it, heard his podcast. You haven't read a book by him, an article by him, you're not on his newsletter. I encourage you, whether you're a coach, you're a parent, you're a player, how he talks about things during your season, during your practice, during your game, during your life, makes so much sense. And he believes in E plus R equals O. So many college football and basketball teams are going to that. You're going to see that being preached at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Where I came across this first was the Florida Gators, when they were coached by Coach Urban Meyer, and now while they're coached by Coach Dan Mullen. Both subscribe to Tim Knight's system and have him in to talk to their players. So I look for the Jags to just continue that tradition with Urban Meyer. But the E in E plus R equals O is an event. The R is the response. And you put the event and your response to it, and it equals the outcome. It's really simple. So you think about it. Something happens. Maybe you were supposed to play one team, and they're all sick. Maybe one of them has COVID, and they got caught up in COVID tracing. So you found this out at 10 o'clock, and you decided, I'm going to call around and see if there's any teams we can pick up instead. Well, there is. There's maybe a pretty good team in your area. It's off tonight. They're willing to play you, but they want to play you at their place. You were scheduled for a home game. You tell them, I don't know. I don't know if my principal's going to go for this. Or your dean, your athletic director, whoever. You get back to them and say yes. So, you send out your text or your email or whatever to parents and players. And it says, tonight's game has changed. We're not going to be playing team one because they have some sickness. So, we're going to play team two. Well, what you have done is you have created an external event, an E. The change is the event. So the next step is stress is the automatic internal response. Now, I know some of you are saying, Sam, you don't know that my kids are going to be stressed. You don't know that my parents are going to be stressed. I've been with them for 5 years now, and they know how things are, and they handle things really well. Do you truly know that? Have you worked with them on it? Or are you just assuming because when they show up in front of you, they're not having meltdowns? Because that's what a lot of coaches judge things on. You know, my players are handling it because I don't hear them griping. Well, maybe you don't hear them griping because you're not around them. Or you're dealing with something else. Or they're not doing it around you because they know you get upset. any change in anybody's routine, it's human nature. It creates stress. I tell the players that I'm around, for every action you make, whether it be in life, in a game, in a practice, in school, there is a consequence. It's either a positive consequence or it's a negative consequence. And from day one, I teach that. I teach that, look, consequence isn't a negative word. It doesn't have to be. There can be a positive consequence. And so, when you take the event, which is the change in the schedule, they're not playing home, they're playing away, and they're not playing an average team, they're playing a pretty good team. That's their change. The R is the stress. It is the internal response. So it's event plus response. The change plus the stress will equal your outcome. So you need to have an outcome in mind and discuss that with them. Are you going to focus on beating this pretty good team? Is that all you're going to be talking about on the bus there? Is how you're going to beat this team? Or are you going to talk about a goal as your outcome? Are you going to set a goal as your outcome to maybe lower that stress, to lower the effect of the change in order to get a better outcome? So, you know, if you're a football team, you want to hold them under 100 yards rushing. You believe you can do that, and you tell your team that you believe that, and here's why. And you list all kinds of positive things. And in your mind, you think that will relieve their stress. That will relieve one part of the change, because they know that you think they're going to hit that goal. Well, when they do, they automatically think the big outcome, they're going to win, even though you never said that. So that's what you need to be looking at, is the event, the change, what the response is going to be, that's going to lead to the outcome. We got to see that, 2 weeks ago? If you're a baseball fan, you got to see the event, the change. Major League Baseball handed down, we're done with your sticky substances when you're pitching. We're going to start checking you guys. We're going to check you between innings. We're going to check you after innings. If we have to, we're going to come out in the middle of the game and check you. We may check you up to 10 or 15 times a game. We don't know. But you're going to quit using the sticky substances. We're tired of it. We fixed the baseball before the season started, and it was supposed to be juiced. We were supposed to be getting offense, so that we can gain the fans back from the pandemic. Now you guys are using sticky substance and it's screwing it all up. So there was your event. Well, immediately the response from the pitchers were like, ran a gamut. I did an episode on it from, no, you can't do this and right in the middle of the season. You can't just all of a sudden change the rules. And, you know, reporters had to remind some of these pitchers, it is against the rules. It's illegal for you to be doing this. One pitcher, I think he was Tampa Bay Rays pitcher, said he had been using sunscreen and rosin from the rosin bag, which is legal, and mixing those together and using that as his sticky substance. Did that count? So you saw their stress levels. It went into effect. So what was the outcome? The outcome the first couple days was the hitters had problems. Because, see, they were expected to hit this non-sticky baseball that was supposed to be juiced out of the park all the time now. They put a lot of pressure on themselves, and you saw the strikeouts. You saw the numbers going down. Now, this week, what was it, 3 days ago, we had a 15-10 baseball game. That's been the outcome. So sometimes things take longer. Your event may be one of your star players, one of your starters, gets hurt, going to be out the next 3 games. They're going to get stressed. How they handle that, how they handle the change, is going to affect your outcome. And so that's kind of what, I'm not going to run through them fast, but I'm also not going to take my time. I may take certain ones of these, put a couple of them together, and do a breakdown episode a little while later, or you guys can write me if you want more of a breakdown episode. But these are 10 do's and don'ts about change. And they came from Tim Knight. And I got to hear him speak on this. And number one is, don't expect certainty or stability. And that's been one of the problems with me throughout my life. I have Asperger's. And I need stability. And when I don't have it, it really throws me off. But you can help players or your kids or your assistant coaches. Or, you know, if you're the athletic director, you can help your coaches. Whatever. You can help them not to expect certainty and not to expect stability by creating change. If the football team practices every day after school, let's say at 3:30, switch it up. Tell the head football coach, you don't play at 3:30. You play at 7:30. You have to have at least one practice this week for the next 4 weeks at 7:30. And watch the response. You'll have some coaches that will stare through you, say okay, go think about it, process it, come up with a big list, and come up to you 4 hours later or the next day and have a list of all the reasons why they shouldn't practice at 7:30. It's too hard for the kids to go home and come back. They do it on game night, but coach doesn't want to answer that, you know? So you're taking away a little bit of that coach's stability of practicing every day at 3:30. The certainty that that's what's going to happen. and making them prepare, because your due, your number one due, is do prepare for ambiguity and instability. So by changing things up with your coaches, it's not that you want to create instability within them. You're wanting them to learn to lean on each other, on their team, on you, on your assistant coaches, and really figure things out. Number two, don't seek protection in a comfort zone, which is what a lot of our players do. Say you have a basketball team. You have a star player. And her favorite three-point spot is the left-hand corner. You've got her shooting everywhere now. She's drilling it. She's leading the league in three-pointers made, points. She pumps her team up because when they pass her the ball, if she's around the three-point line, she doesn't care to fake, take two dribbles, throw it in the post. She shares the ball. But you see her have an event that causes a change, which causes stress. So, first quarter of the basketball game, she misses every shot. It should clue something in to you or your assistant coaches. There's a change. Did she change her shot? Is she not concentrating? Is the defender getting in her head? And the next thing you will see in that second quarter is she will want to go to her comfort zone. And I told you, her comfort zone is the left-hand corner three-pointer. However, she's your point guard. She's not comfortable handling the ball. She's not comfortable bringing up the ball. She's not comfortable making an entry pass. She wants to be in her comfort zone. Don't allow her to have that protection, that going there and hiding. You have to preach to them, and this is your due, your number two due. Do get comfortable with the uncomfortable. If I'm a basketball coach, and I know so many of us out there, we run that zigzag drill where we zigzag to the elbow, or we go straight to the elbow, we work on a crossover, and we go to half court. And then they take it behind their back. They go to the elbow. And then they do a hesitation move. And they end up in the corner. They dribble across the baseline. And then they start the zigzag drill again. Working on crossovers. Working it between the legs. Behind the back. Hesitation moves. And we do that. But do we prepare them to get comfortable with the uncomfortable? Do we tell them mistakes are how we learn? I want you to go as fast as you can. If I don't see basketballs all over this gym, from where you're going as fast as you can and you lose it, then you guys are going to run, or you guys are going to have to practice longer, or whatever. You're going to have to shoot free throws and make so many. Whatever. But that's a simple thing to get them used to being comfortable in the uncomfortable by going as fast as they can. Because by pushing themselves to go faster, even though they're making mistakes, mistakes are how we learn as human beings, you will see them progress weekly, monthly, halfway through the season. If you take a video of them first day doing it, getting used to being uncomfortable, halfway through the season you take a different video, you're going to see a completely different player running that zigzag drill because they've gotten faster, they've got better on their crossover, they've gotten better at taking the ball behind their back. They're not afraid of making mistakes. They're not afraid to be aggressive. Get your players used to being uncomfortable. Number three, don't ignore the change. Don't distort it. The world's worst thing that I've seen coaches do, and I'm talking in the pros even. Matter of fact, it happened this week with the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis got hurt. You saw some players ignore it. He's fine, he'll play. They distorted it. He just tweaked it. It's not that big of a deal. But then you're hearing the coaching staff or the medical staff say he may have torn his ACL and be out the rest of the season. He's not going to play in the NBA Finals. And so that was the big discussion leading up to the start of the NBA Finals. Now, you can't do that. You cannot distort something to your team. Because if they find out you knew and you purposely distorted it, they see it as you lied to them. You committed the sin of omission, of not telling. Or if you ignore the change. You've got a player who broke up with his girlfriend, and all week he has practiced like garbage. But you have ignored it. That's his personal life. I don't have to handle his personal life. His parents will take care of it. So you've ignored it all week. He wants you to recognize, hey, I'm having a bad week here. You know, I am playing third base and I have not hit the first baseman at all this week. I haven't hit the ball. I'm not seeing the ball. I am striking out at least once a game. And I am hitting fly balls like crazy because I'm undercutting on my swing. And you're not correcting any of that. You're not mentioning it. You know there's a change in your player. He broke up with his girlfriend. He's not focused. But you don't want to take care of it. Well, your outcome is going to be that player's going to lose respect for you because you've been preaching family, but yet the family has a problem and you don't want to deal with it. Your outcome is going to be you're going to lose games. You're going to lose that player. You may lose other players on the team's focus or their belief in you, their belief in each other. So, do see things with clarity and with courage. And that's something you've got to define for your players. And if you're an athletic director, your coaches, if you're a parent, you want to define that for your kids. Courage is not about not losing. It is not about doing everything right. So many times, we want to say that person was courageous because they did such and such and such and such. The outcome doesn't matter when you're being courageous. I remember a couple years ago on a subway over in Europe, there was a guy with a gun. Three Americans were on that train. They rushed the guy with the gun. They tackled him, got the gun away from him, and they were considered heroes. And everybody wanted to talk about how courageous they were. Would they have been less courageous if the guy would have shot him? I mean, think about that. Because, see, sometimes I think about, I can't remember his last name. I need to look it up since I can't remember. I remember his first name is Todd. And in the pictures, he was wearing an Alabama hat. And on September 11th, he was on Flight 93. He was on the phone with his wife, and he said, "Hey, I think we're going to do something. Just remember, I love you." And he said, "Let's rock and roll." Him and other passengers brought down that plane. Because the terrorists that day were planning to put that plane in our United States Capitol. And Todd and his fellow passengers were not going to allow that. Everyone died on Flight 93. In a Pennsylvania field. Because that happened, were they not courageous? And I'm being serious. Just because your kid, your player, your coach, whoever, your fans, they don't have the outcome you want, doesn't mean they didn't go through the struggle. Didn't mean they didn't give all they have. That they didn't accomplish something. And that they were courageous. Because the outcome wasn't what you wanted it to be. If you told this kid on third base, "I need you to steal home. I'm going to give the batter a bunt, son. I need you to slide head first." And this kid said, "I've only slid head first 3 times in my entire life. I believe in you. You can do it." Kid goes as fast as he can. Slides head first. However, the batter didn't get the ball down on the bunt. He struck out. He was the third out, not the kid on third base. Do you not congratulate the kid on third base and tell him how courageous he was? He's only did that 3 times in his life. But he put it all out there for your team. For his team. For his brothers. For his family. For his fans. For his school. So I think you need to define courage to your players, to your team. Don't hold on. Number four is don't hold on to what you need to let go. There's sometimes in our lives, there are people, players, things. Deep down, we know we need to let go. But because that would be a change, it would create a ripple effect, maybe. Maybe your lucky chair that you sit in at volleyball matches. Let's hide it. But it's going to create a ripple effect. Because you've got to find another chair, and someone may have to give up their lucky chair, and you may not like the new chair, and on and on and on. But where I see this on most teams, they've got a player who they believe in, who's part of the family, who's part of the school, the community. And you've had him on your team for 2 years, whatever team that is. And for 2 years, he's just basically been a cancer on that team. Just by something little, he says, he can turn the whole team spirit or drop the whole team spirit, or he can change how they view things. And it's very rare that you catch him doing good. Guys, sometimes you need to let him go. You don't want to. It's going to cause a change in your team. Especially if it's a starter and it's someone that people look up to. It's going to cause a ripple effect. There may be even other players that quit after you tell this kid to go. But you can't hold on to what you know you need to let go. And yes, you may suffer for it for days or for weeks. But by the end of your season, you see how much better your team is. Maybe not in the win-loss column, but they get along better. They practice better. They practice harder. They're learning more. They're happier. And you can see that change and how it is going to better your team next year by you making that one decision. Don't be afraid to let go what you need to let go. And your do is do eliminate what is no longer necessary. I see that also in a lot of teams. They want to do a routine. So they do strength and conditioning 3 weeks leading up to when they can first practice. First week of practice, they do 30 minutes of warm-ups. Second week of practice, they do 30 minutes of warm-ups. 2 months of the season, they do 30 minutes of warm-ups. And you come in to watch practice, and you look at them and say, why are y'all doing 30 minutes of warm-ups? I thought you told me on the phone the other day you needed them to save their legs. Why are you doing 30 minutes of warm-ups? That's our routine. That's what we do. Oh, okay. No. If they're in the shape you need them to be in, they have the strength, the conditioning, the attitude, or you're having them just wanting to warm up body parts. Guys, you may need that 30 minutes of conditioning the first week. 2 months into your season? No. You can start having them do 10, 15 minutes of warm-up before y'all start practice. To save their legs. You may not do the warm-up routine. You change it up so they don't get bored. They don't walk through it. It doesn't become rote. And they don't get anything out of it. You may start a completely different routine. Determine what is no longer necessary and cut that out of your practice. Yes, you can add something, or as the season goes, maybe instead of practicing 2 hours or two and a half hours, maybe you're cutting it down to an hour and 45 minutes, hour and 50 minutes. Maybe toward playoffs, you're cutting down to an hour and a half. You really need to think about that. These two go together. They're number five. Don't act like a victim, and you need to learn to take ownership. And I'm talking to you listening, because you've got to learn it before the parents on your teams, the kids on your teams, the fans in your community can learn it. Don't act like a victim. You have to take ownership. Even if you didn't cause the change, you can't say, oh, poor me. You've got to deal with it. You've got to take ownership. This change is happening. And come up with a response to it that will lead to a positive outcome. Number six. You don't blame your county, your district, your community, your fans, your parents, your players. As a rationalization for resisting change, you do have to step up. You do have to be a leader. So don't blame the change on the fans. Not very many fans are coming and watching us, guys. I know that now. And I know that hurts y'all's feelings and distracts you. No, don't rationalize it on someone else's back. You step up and you be a leader and you find and make a way for a positive outcome. I did this. I still sometimes do this. Don't get locked into narrow, negative focus frames. Do understand the change. Do align with it. Do use it for your benefit. When I was coaching basketball, I would get so upset when a player would get two or three fouls. Because I knew in the book, you know, the basketball coaching book that all of us have in our heads, you need to pull them out. You need to save their fouls. And I would be so negative towards that player. And then I would watch film, and that player was getting fouls because someone else was losing their man, and they were driving in. The player that was getting the foul was covering for his teammate and stopping the ball, and they were kicking it to the fouled player's offensive player. So he would go play defense on his original player, and because he couldn't do all of that in time, and no one was helping him, he was getting fouls. And as soon as I realized that, as soon as I watched that on film and processed it, I immediately felt bad for the simple fact I had been negative. I had been ranting and raving about it on the sidelines after the game, you know, practice the next day, instead of understanding. I couldn't understand at that point in the game because I didn't see it. But I did have to understand we were making a change. That player had to come out and a different player had to go in. I needed to align with that. I needed to use it for my benefit. Maybe to put a younger player, less experienced in, that had a lot of talent, that I had high hopes for, and use that as my positive outcome. Okay, I've got one of my starters on the bench with fouls, but I'm getting to play this player that has so much talent. And I need to align with them and be positive with them and see if they'll grow. Because this is probably going to keep happening. And so I want to see this player grow and become a sixth man or maybe even a starter. So you've got to use change for your benefit. 8, don't waste time and energy resisting change. You need to invest your time by adjusting to the change or making your necessary changes to the change. And this is one that I may break down in a further episode because it's huge. Because so many times, rules change. And we want to waste time resisting it. I know during the pandemic era, our state did away with jump balls. Because they felt like that was going to be a spreading issue. There were a lot of coaches out there, spent a lot of time and energy resisting, writing letters, talking to the news, writing, you know, our athletic system, talking to their principals, talking to the Board of Education. Instead of investing time to adjusting to that, to getting their out-of-bounds defense better, to working with their kids, how to understand where they were supposed to be, why they were supposed to be there, what happens when this happens, and making the necessary changes. You're not having jump ball, period, this year. It may not come back, you know, this coming season. But that's the thing. Halfway through the season, they're not going to say, oh, we're going to put the jump ball back in. We know it causes spreading issues, but we're just going to do it. No, it doesn't make any sense. That's not going to happen. Cut your losses, quit resisting the change, and figure out how you're going to adjust to it and use it for a positive outcome. Number 9, I know you've heard before, but it needs to be said constantly to yourself, to your players, to your fans. don't try to control the uncontrollables. Do control what you can control. The biggest one that I use this for is the referees, the umpires. Don't try to control the uncontrollable. You cannot control the referees. You cannot control the umpires. You can't change their mood. If they come there in a bad mood, you can't change their mood. You can't, but you know what you can change? You can control your controllables. Self-evaluate. Are you in a bad mood and you're seeing things that aren't true? Or is a referee having a bad day? I've talked to referees. And a lot of them will flat out tell you, these two teams suck. I'm not going to call every foul that happens. I'm not going to throw a flag on every single play. We will be here till midnight. I am not blind as a bat. But let's all get real. These two teams suck and they're going to commit a foul or I can throw a flag on every single play. I'm not doing it. Get over it. So, sometimes that's what they're doing. Yes, you, the parents, the fans, are seeing a kid get held on every football offensive play. Do your best to take a step back and quit looking at your own kid. Look at the kid two over from him on the line and watch him for three plays and see if he's also being held. Because if he is, no, the referee is not blind as a bat. Especially if you've seen them for the last 15 years. They didn't all of a sudden go blind. They're just not calling it. I've seen it in basketball. There's a basketball official that I totally respect. He helped me learn one of this actual lesson. I went to a midget league game. He happened to be there. He was refereeing. And I thought my mouth was going to drag on the bleachers. I wasn't there to watch any particular kid. I was there to watch our midget league team to see, you know, what kind of players we were going to have coming up in the future. 5 years, 8 years from now, you never know. But they were fouling, they were walking. I could have swore the ball went out of bounds and he didn't even call that. And I was like, man, he's having a bad day. Or I've thought all these years, he's better than what he really is. And I was sitting with parents from our community. And of course, they were griping. Halftime. I went to go get a Coke and a hot dog. You know me. I've always got to get a hot dog where I go. As I'm walking to go back to the stands, I see him. And we stopped to say hi, and I said, rough game. And he said, parents on both sides are yelling, screaming, and killing me when I don't understand why they don't yell at the coach. And I've known him since I played. I was like, what? Because I was thinking, I'm the coach. What are you talking about here? And he said, it is not my fault that every player on this team, and he pointed at one side, walks every time they get the ball. Every player does. He said so, and he pointed the opposite way. He said, so these fans are yelling, walk, walk, walk. And he said, I want to turn around and say, I know. But they're never going to play offense. They're never going to keep the ball. They're never going to shoot the ball. They're never going to pass the ball. They're never going to rebound the ball. They're never going to get to do anything offensively because every single one of them walk. And I can call it every single time. You can't do that in Major League. He said they need to be yelling at their coach to teach them how not to walk instead of yelling at me to call the walk. He said in this team, and he pointed the opposite direction, he said they foul on every play because their coach wants them to play aggressive. He said, I would like nothing better to foul out every single one of their players, but the coach would just blame me. Instead of seeing my players are playing aggressive, but they don't understand that they're hitting, they're grabbing, they're knocking people over. That's not aggressive, that's stupidity. And he said, so I can't call every foul they do and every walk they do. He said, all I can think about is doing what you're doing right now. He said, after this game, I've got the next game off, and then I've got a referee again. He said, I want to grab a Coke and a hot dog so bad I can't see straight. And I said, well, I hope you get that. I'm going to stick around for a little bit. If you want to set with me during the next game, you know, we can talk about anything but basketball or everything about basketball. And he laughed and went on. And I decided, I made a conscious effort. I pretended there wasn't any room over to where I was sitting. And I set off by myself, which is what I normally do anyway. And being away from parents that were screaming and yelling about every little thing gave me a different focus, a different vision. And I could actually see what that referee was talking about. Because, see, I didn't have parents in my ears pointing out their kid was getting fouled. That kid their kid is guarding is walking. I could see the big picture. This whole team has the same problem, and this coach has a hole. Number 10, don't slow down and drag your feet. You've got to accelerate, get busy making the changes you need to make. Don't mope around when somebody makes a change. Like there's an injured player. One of your starters has gotten injured. Your goalkeeper has gotten injured in soccer. You can't slow down and drag your feet and they're at the doctor the next day during practice, so you do everything at practice in the middle of the field and the goalies don't get any work and you just do other things. Well, what you've done is you've slowed down and drug your feet on naming a new starter or putting that backup goalie in and showing them that you have faith in them, you're positive with them, showing the team you believe in them, and getting the team to gather around that new goalie. Because, see, you've got to accelerate. When there's a change being made, you need to adapt right now. You need to get busy, make the changes you need to make so that you can get a positive outcome. So you can get players believing the way you need them to believe. So don't slow down and drag your feet. Number 11, don't let the past control you. Do embrace the future. I see that. A lot of teams uphold their seniors. College, high school, their eighth graders, whether it be middle school. And they make almost like the last month of the season as this long goodbye. They don't want those players to leave. They've had them for 4 years. They've established relationships. They've established bonds. They've established bonds and relationships with the parents, with the grandparents. And the thought of moving past, you know, this kid's been my point guard for 4 years now. They can't let that go. You've got to embrace the future. Another example that I've seen is coaches that play seniority games. And it's because of my past, I don't play seniority. Probably to my detriment. See, I was a decent athlete. And when I started in middle school, I had a coach who believed in seniority. We had 3 7th graders that were better than the 8th graders. In the beginning of the season, he knew those 8th graders. He knew what they could do. He knew what he could count on them and not count on them to do. He didn't know us. Now, eventually, he came around and he started us. But I definitely made up my mind that particular day. I'm not playing seniority anymore. So when I went to high school, there were quite a few of us freshmen that were pretty good. And it took us about 2 days. All of us went together and talked to the coach. And we just said, you know, are you going to play seniority? Because it was mostly an upperclassman team. Or are you going to play who's best? And there were 5 of us freshmen that had been playing together since we were, I don't know, 4th, 5th grade on AAU teams, on winter league teams and summer league teams and going to camp together. And he was like, I don't know. He shocked us. He started 4 of us freshmen and 1 senior. And parents literally had meltdowns in the bleachers that their kids who had started for 2 years weren't starting anymore and they were seniors. This was their last year, is what they kept hollering. And you're going to start a freshman? If you guys can't tell, I'm pretty blunt. At one point, one of these parents had been saying this for 5-6 games. We came out at halftime. She was saying it again. And I looked at her and I said, look, if it is that important for your kid to start, I'll give up my starting position so your kid's name can be announced. They can stand there at jump ball. And then first dead ball, I'll go in for him. Will that make you happy? She told me I was a smart aleck, which I was. And my parents got mad at me and talked to me about that later. But she said, no, I want them to play. I said, that's not what you're hollering about. You're hollering about them starting. If you just want them to get their name announced, I'll give up my position right now. If you want them to play more, then they need to outwork me. They need to be better than me. They need to quit sitting on the bleachers during practice. Maybe they should come in 45 minutes early like 5 of us freshmen do. Or stay after like 5 of us freshmen do. And like I said, you know, I finished playing the game. I got to go home and listen to my parents. You don't talk to an adult that way. I was done with it. It was old to me. And so, again, in my mind, seniority, my past with a player, doesn't mean a brand new player can't take their position, can't take their playing time, can't be better than them. Because I have to embrace our future as a team, as a community, as a school. Because if you're always living in the past, you're letting the future down. Now, am I saying every year start 5 freshmen? No. But I'm telling you, don't get so focused on your seniors and saying goodbye that you forget to say hello to your freshmen. Number 12, don't rely on old skills. Build new skills all the time. I think that's one of the biggest things, a resistance to change that coaches, fans, players, it's human nature to want to rely on your tried and true skills. You know, with these podcast episodes, a lot of times I still write on paper with a pen. My sister this year at Christmas said enough. You are she's an environmentalist. I love her to death. She reminds me that I need to take care of the earth for my nieces. She was like, you are killing trees to write on paper to do a podcast that you're going to throw away in 3 hours. So for Christmas, she got me a rocket book. I opened it, and I was like, what is this? She said, you see that pen? I said, yeah. She said, you take that pen, and you write in this notebook. And I must have looked at her like she had grown another head. And she was like, open it up. It has directions in there. This has chips in it. It is technology. It can be paired to your phone or paired to your computer. so you can write out all your podcast notes. And then you can hit down here in the corner, save, and it will shoot it to your phone or to your computer. And you can save it. You can put it in your podcast episode notes. You can read from it while you are doing your podcast. Whatever you want to do. And she said, and then she flipped it over and on the back, excuse me, it had that it was erasable. You took water, put it on a paper towel, squeezed out the excess water, wiped it over the pages in the notebook, and it goes away. Now, if you delete it on your phone or your computer, your tablet, or wherever you saved it to, you have to delete it and it'll go away there too. But you can reuse this notebook over and over and over and over again. I'm not buying paper notebooks and killing trees. Well, I pretended to think this was sliced bread. And I came home and I thought, I don't want to use this. I don't like it. I didn't think of this. I didn't ask for this for Christmas. I can't believe she thinks she knows about podcasts. She's never did a podcast. She's never seen me do a podcast. I don't even think she's talked to me about a podcast. And that rocket book sat on my table where I record these episodes. So that I had to look at it. And one day I thought, I might as well try this. So I did. I quickly found, yes, it's good for my podcast episodes, notes. And that, yeah, occasionally, well, I save them to my phone. But pretty much as soon as I do the podcast, I make sure it's up and I didn't make too many mistakes and I don't need to redo it. Then I erase it off my phone. But what I found it's really good for is making practice plans. Writing out practice plans, shoving them over to my phone or my computer, and I can, part of the software, I can hit, it'll turn it into like I typed it. And then I can print those out and hand them out to assistant coaches. I could hand them out to the players. I could hand them out to everybody in the school if I wanted to. I also have found you can draw up plays on it and take your towel and wipe them off. You can take notes on it during a game. Have one of your managers hold it and as you're coaching, say, we've got to use a different formation when we are wanting to run a slant across the middle. You can have them take notes as far as number 14 likes to chase a high fastball. And you can put that in so that the next time you play, you go over that with your team. Or you put it in your phone so that when you review it tomorrow and you're making your practice plan, then you're making it from the notes you got from last night's game. So don't be afraid to build new skills. It doesn't always have to be technology. It can be a new way of doing things. I always tell coaches, there's a couple coaching clinics. They were free and they were on the web. You didn't have to attend them. You just had to sit in front of your computer screen. And there were college coaches and NBA coaches in basketball that were given, that were part of these big month-long clinics. I put it out there to a lot of my friends that are basketball coaches. And they were like, I've never did this before. Who should I watch? And I was like, well, I'm going to watch blah, 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 blah. And they were like, you don't run that system? No. But that doesn't matter. I can still learn from them. What do you mean? Well, it's about building new skills. No, I don't run that offensive scheme. But I do need to know how to guard it. I do need to know how to understand it. I need to know how they teach it so that I can figure out how I'm going to teach my defense to defend it. And the guy I was talking to on the phone, he was like, oh. And it was like the light bulb went off. And I was like, yeah. You can attend whatever you want. You can sign up for them all. You have a month to watch them. I said, I can tell you there are some of my favorite coaches. I don't care what they're speaking on. When Coach K, Billy Donovan, Coach Calipari, Brendan Suffin, Jay Wright, Tony Bennett, when I'm seeing these names, I don't care what they're speaking on. I'm listening. When you're winning 60-70% of your games, I need to listen to you. If you're coaching Division III, I don't care. I need to listen to you. So that was part of me learning to embrace new skills. Not being resistant to change and saying my old skills are the best. They may not be. So there's your 12 don'ts and your 12 do's about change. You can use those in your work, in your business, with your employees. You can use them with your kids, your players, your fans, your parents of your players. Athletics, you can use it with all your coaches. But you can't listen to me. I'm at an hour and 19 minutes and say, oh, I got this. No. You actually have to think. You have to process this. You've got to figure out, what do I want to use? What do I not want to use? And when you get to the not want to use, why? Is it too big of a change? Excuse me. So that is one thing that I can say to all of you. You can learn something from everybody. Whether it's how to do something or how not to do something. But in order for you to learn anything, whether it's how to do something or how not to do something, you've got to think about it. You've got to process it. you've got to decide to try it. And when you try it, then you've got to evaluate it. Guys, get on this. It's summer. This is when you make changes and when you teach your team to deal with changes that are going to affect them in your future season coming up. So I encourage all of you, listen to this and process it. If you got any questions, comments, problems, or protests, I told you earlier how you can get a hold of me. On Twitter, I am Nat, N-A-T, Sports, O-T. You can talk to me on Twitter. My private messages are open. You can hit me up on Facebook. It's National Sports Overtime. You can write me email, nationalsportsovertime@gmail.com. Let me know if you like this episode. I have all kinds of them. Short, long, whatever. And also tell me what you want daily as far as sports news, updates. Do you want motivational things? Do you want coaching things? What do you want? I wish you the best of luck in your day. I'll talk to you soon. And hopefully, I'll get to see you sometime down the road.